I want us to think for a few minutes this morning about the problem that we have if all we ever do is give the Lord our leftover time. I'm afraid in this busy age in which we live, sometimes we fall into that habit of just only dealing with the things of the Lord when there's not anything else going on in our lives. And these days, that hardly is ever the case, that there's nothing else going on. In the first chapter of Malachi, at verse 8, a statement was made about the people of that day who, when it came time to make the sacrifices that they were commanded to give at the temple, would only give that which they had no other use for. He says, "When you offer the blind as a sacrifice, is it not evil? And when you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer it then to your governor. Would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you favorably, says the Lord of hosts?" These were people who, when an animal was needed for sacrifice, found one that they really didn't want anyway. Maybe one that was lame or sick, or as one of the other passages in Malachi seems to indicate, they would even go so far as to steal an animal to sacrifice. At the very least, they were not sacrificing in the strict sense of the term. They were giving that which they could easily do without. And that was a serious problem that the Lord rebuked them for very sternly in Malachi. In our day, when it comes to money and material things that might be needed in the work of the Lord, most of us understand that the Lord's work can sometimes require sacrifice. Something needs to be urgently done, and we lack the surplus funds to make that possible. A lot of good brethren would dig down deeper and maybe even do without some things on their own in order to get the Lord's work done. We certainly read in Acts chapter 4 about the remarkable generosity of the Christians in Jerusalem who, when there was a need for financial resources to take care of the poor in their congregation, that some of them went so far as to sell property in order to raise the funds to be able to help out. Acts 4 and verse 34 says, "Nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet, and they distributed to each as anyone had need." Well, there was a situation when there was a need that they couldn't easily take for. They did some very difficult things. They, even if they didn't have the cash to do that with, they would raise the funds by going so far as to sell property that they had. In our day, when the collection plate is passed, we all understand, I think, that the needs of the Lord's work deserves more than that we would just take a quick look in our wallet and see if there's anything in there that we haven't spent elsewise, and if there's anything we can do without. We understand in terms of the financial needs of the Lord's work that we sometimes need to adjust our standard of living in order to take care of these needs. We obviously don't give always as we ought to, but most of us know what the word sacrifice means when it comes to our material possessions, and we feel guilty when we ignore our conscience concerning financial sacrifice. But I want to talk with you for a little bit about something that's an even more precious commodity than money, and that is our time. Most of us have more money than we have time. There's only a finite amount of that. Nobody has any more than 24 hours a day. And the fact of the matter is that sometimes time is required in the Lord's work, and it must also be sacrificed in situations where it might not be easy for us to find the time to do certain things that need to be done. I'm afraid in an affluent society where sometimes we can meet the financial needs, even urgent, extraordinary needs that arise from time to time, we can sometimes meet those needs without having to dig very deep. We can take care of those things without having to sell any property to raise the funds to do it. But we live in a busy age where nobody has any more than 24 hours a day, and we may be less willing to sacrifice in the matter of time than we are money. I know Paul wasn't necessarily talking about time management in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 at verse 14, but there's a principle here when he says, "For the third time, I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I do not seek yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." In verse 15, he says, "I will very gladly spend and be spent for your souls. For the more abundantly I love you, the less I am loved." Paul was willing to come to Corinth when there was a need for that to take place. And he was willing to expend himself sacrificially in their behalf, including, I think, the expenditure of his time on their behalf. Paul certainly had other things to take care of than the needs of the work in Corinth. But Paul understood that with the time, as with financial material means, the object of life is not to see how much we can have at the end of life. It is to spend and to be spent. All of our resources, both time and money, are given to us to be used. And they are to be used liberally, especially in the Lord's work. And with our time, we need to be willing, when it comes to the priority matters of life, to be willing to spend and to be spent. I say money is valuable. We all understand that. But since time is a more precious commodity, most people nowadays, regardless of what the cause is, whether it be a school organization or a benevolent institution or any other cause that we might devote ourselves to that would need either time or money or sometimes both, when we want to support a cause, most people nowadays would much more quickly want to write a check and give it to the organization and say, "I don't have any time to give to you, but here, I'll give you a little money." That's easier to give. If you've ever been involved in fundraising for any kind of nonprofit organization, you understand that people may be strapped financially, but they would much rather give you some money than to try to eat into their schedule book because there's precious little of that time that can be given. Then the Lord's work, I think for every person who has a problem giving his money, there are several more of us who have a problem giving the thing that we're most selfish and most stingy about, and that is our time. If the Lord's work ever conflicts with any of our activities, and that happens very often, doesn't it? We will hardly ever consider giving up the activity as a sacrifice. We may try to find a way to do both. We may try to manipulate our schedule around in some kind of a way so as to do all of the things that we want to do and that we believe are important to do. But it just happens sometimes that there's an unavoidable conflict in our schedule book. There's a slot there in the agenda that two separate events are trying to occupy. And maybe there's no other time when either of those can be done. There's going to have to be a choice made, this activity or that activity, which one is going to get this slot and which one will have to yield. I'm afraid that too often in our culture, it's the Lord's activities that always have to yield. There's a schedule conflict. The premise usually is the Lord's work is flexible. We don't have to do that at any particular time, and so that can take a back seat. This other activity will get this slot in my agenda book. The concept that there might be an activity that is good in its own realm, we may enjoy it, we may believe it's important in regard to the temporal activities of this life, we somehow never seem to get our minds around the concept that there might be a time and a place to sacrifice that activity. Simply give it up so that something that regards the Lord's work can have that time slot. Not that the other thing is evil, but in terms of relative priority, would we not sometimes be willing to say, "I'd like to do that thing. It's important, but it's not nearly as important as the Lord's work. So reluctant as I am to do it, as hard as it will be to part with this activity, I'll simply sacrifice it." When it comes to sacrifice is measured in terms of how costly it is. There's an activity that it would cost you dearly to sacrifice in order to pay proper attention to something in the Lord's work. I'll just tell you, the costlier it is, the bigger the sacrifice will be, and the more love will be involved in that if you'll make that sacrifice. Sometimes those sacrifices are just out of the question. We take a very possessive attitude toward our activities, maybe even more possessive than our money. If here's something I want to do, we get such a tight grip on that that the very thought of letting go of that to make a sacrifice of it is unthinkable. This is mine. I have a right to do this. I want to do this. Nobody can tell me that I shouldn't do this. I'm going to do this. I'll take care of this priority in the Lord's work some other time if I ever have the opportunity. Somehow is the premise that it's the Lord's work that always has to give. Scheduling conflict, we can always put the Lord's work in the back seat and tend to that some other time. I'm not sure where that premise comes from. That when there's a scheduling crunch, that we can just assume that the spiritual activity can yield. That's always the flexible thing that can yield to whatever the other activity is. Somebody who looked at our schedule books might sometimes wonder if we think that our spiritual activities are the only optional things that we're involved with. Nothing else is optional, but the Lord's work is. We may occasionally sacrifice the having of certain things, as the brethren in Jerusalem did, but very few of us will let the Lord stand in the way of doing something that we want to do. We are like Martha, busy and occupied about many things, and extraordinarily attached to those important things that we are doing, and unwilling to yield sacrificially. Well, it's a plain fact that we do with our calendars and our date books precisely what we've always said was sinful to do with our pocketbooks, our checkbooks, and that is to give the Lord nothing but what is left over. And I'm not so sure if there's very much difference between what we do in that area than what we read about the Jews doing in Malachi chapter 1. When a physical animal was needed to sacrifice, well, we can't really not do that because the Lord has commanded us to do it. But we'll find a way to take as much sacrifice of that out of that as possible. So we'll look for maybe an animal that's all lame or sick. We really can't make use of that anyway. We don't want it. That's expendable. And so we'll give that to the Lord. If the Lord needs an hour or two now and then, that's fine. Unless we have anything we want to do with that time. Begins to look as if the Lord's work gets our time only when there is absolutely nothing else going on. And when is that in these days? Ask men who serve as elders, either in this congregation or elsewhere, how hard it is to find time for congregational activities that they want to plan when the premise is we've got to find some time when nothing else is going on. You ask elders how hard it is to find the time when there's nothing else going on. What's the premise of that search? It is that if anything else is going on, well, we can't schedule the Lord's activity at that time because the Lord's work is always second. Forbid the thought that we would sacrifice the other activity in order to give the Lord's work priority. When I get invitations from churches in various places to come and hold a gospel meeting, it's always interesting to me to see the struggle that goes on to find what week we're going to have the meeting. We, of course, have to find a week when nothing else is going on, because anything else would trump the gospel meeting. So we've got to find a week when nothing else is going on. There are not many of those weeks available in the yearly calendar anymore. It's interesting to me over the years that I've been doing meetings. You know, used to be meetings would cluster in the spring and the fall. March and April, very busy months. September and October were very busy months for meetings. But anymore, meetings spread out almost evenly across the calendar year. I think it was 2 years ago that I had three meetings in January. And you know why that is? Because brethren are looking for some week when there's nothing else going on. And January is a pretty dead month as far as other activities are going on. So let's have a meeting in January because nothing else is going on. The first weekend after New Year's weekend is now getting to be a popular weekend for weekend meetings because that's the deadest weekend of the entire year. The New Year has just started. We're over all the festivities. We're back into the real world. So there is nothing else going on the first weekend of January. Well, my heart goes out to elders trying to find the time for meetings or really anything else that needs to be scheduled because there's just no possible time when somebody won't say, oh, we can't have it then. We can't have it then because I've got this to take care of. Sacrifice that activity? Unthinkable. That takes priority. Ask elders how often they hear complaints about services running overtime. I don't preach as long at Broadmoor as I do when I'm on the road. On the road, I typically preach an hour at every lesson. It's pretty average for me. And so brethren, a lot of places are not used to hour-long sermons. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in a place where they were advertising that they were going to have CDs of the lessons available, and the preacher went so far as to say these will be those double-layered CDs that will hold twice as much on them as the regular kind do to accommodate Brother Henry's long, long lessons. Well, we used to joke about long sermons and long-winded preachers and services running long occasionally, but I'll tell you anymore, it's not a joke. People are just as serious as they can be when they say that they believe sermons ought to be short and services ought to get out on time. Because after all, we're taking precious time out to do this, and we've got to get back to the business of real living as quickly as possible. The trend in gospel meetings is towards shorter and shorter and shorter meetings. Well, what's behind that is that meetings at all are just not convenient to do anymore. I know some churches that are entirely dispensing with the whole idea of having meetings. And I ask elders about it, and they say, well, our members are just too busy. They don't have time to do this. It's an intrusion on their schedules. And so we have very poor attendance because we couldn't find a week when nothing else was going on. And so we tried to find a week when the least possible activities were going on. But even so, the attendance is very poor because people have to take care of these other activities. And so we just quit having meetings. And churches that aren't ceasing to have meetings altogether are shortening them and shortening them and shortening them. We've gone from week-long meetings to Monday through or Sunday through Wednesday and fewer meetings in the year and just to weekend meetings and then no meetings at all. Because the Lord's people are very busy people. We live in the same world our secular neighbors do who are busy and we're just too busy anymore to take the time out to do these kinds of things. I frequently hear complaints about church activities that keep children from getting to bed early on school nights. And often from parents who will take their children completely out of school for some important secular activity. Well, folks, I'm here to tell you that your kids will survive. They will survive. They will live and grow to adulthood, even if they miss a little bit of sleep occasionally for something that has to do with the Lord's work. I know that that's possible because I survived to adulthood. I was growing up for several years. We were 40 miles away from the nearest faithful congregation, and so we drove 40 miles back and forth to every service. Gospel meetings, we would do that every night. Wouldn't get home sometimes until 10 o'clock or later. I survived it. Somehow, mysteriously, I reached adulthood having missed a few hours of sleep once in a while or something like that. So I know it's survivable. I'm not opposed to children getting lots of sleep. But I'll tell you, we are just as inconsistent as we can be when we're so concerned about them losing sleep because of something that has to do with the Lord, but we're not particularly concerned about it if it intrudes on their sleep schedule for some secular activity. I wonder sometimes if when it comes to the Lord's work, we are not mainly interested, if we're going to be involved in seeing how little time we can spend with this. How quickly can we get this done and then get back to the real world? How can we constantly whittle away at the Lord's work and keep it from intruding on our schedules? How can we keep it from conflicting with anything else we want to do? Here's what it comes down to. How can we keep the work of the church convenient? Above all, how can we make it convenient and easy and non-intrusive on other things? We'll come back to Malachi. What were those people say? We've got to sacrifice, but how can we keep sacrifice as convenient as possible? We've got to sacrifice an animal. What can we find that represents as little cost to us as possible? They had lost the concept of sacrifice, giving that the Lord, which they could hardly see how they could do without, which represents real sacrifice. Well, the real work of the Lord in all ages has tended to encroach on busy schedules. If you're primarily concerned about keeping your schedule well organized and everything regimented and everything in its place and nothing being allowed to ever get out of bounds, even in extraordinary situations, then you probably ought not to be involved in the Lord's work anyway. So things that tend to need to be done in the Lord's work often come up at inconvenient times and require extraordinary amounts of time. The Lord's work requires extraordinary amounts of time, just as it requires extraordinary amounts of money. And sacrifice is required in both cases. We live in a busy age when time seems especially short, and the things that are possible for us to be involved in are just mind-boggling. It just amazes me at how much there is out there to attract even a godly person's interest. Now, I'm not talking about ungodly activities. I'm talking about the ones that are squeaky clean and good to be involved in. The choice is just mind-boggling. And our tendency is to say, I want to do it all. I don't want to say no to any of it. And so I wonder in this parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10 about the priest and the Levite who passed by the injured man on the other side of the road, I wonder why they did that. You ever wondered why they didn't stop? I think most people, we just tend to think, well, they were just hard-hearted and they didn't want to help. Well, I doubt that. They may have been on their way to worship services at the temple and didn't have time to stop. I'd like to do it, but I can't do it right now. I'll have to let somebody else take care. That'd be a legitimate excuse for most of us, wouldn't it? It breaks my heart. Just breaks my heart. At this point in my life, at how often I have to say, I'd like to help that person, but I can't do it right now. Something is seriously wrong if can't means I can't easily do that. Or I can't do that without cost. Or I can't do that without sacrifice. I believe if we don't get a fresh grip on the concept of sacrifice, both in our time and our money, many of us are going to lose our souls, because what those choices are tests of what our loyalties are. The Lord required the rich young ruler to sell everything he had. I don't think that was being laid down as something that every person would always have to do who ever wanted to follow the Lord. You just have to sell all your property and give it to the poor and follow me. I think the Lord was testing him at the point where he'd have the most difficulty with regard to his priorities. The Lord put him on the spot and tested him at the point at which he needed most to decide what was most important. Unfortunately, when he had to make the choice, he made the choice that his money was most important, and he turned away from the Lord. But every time we have to make a choice between something that regards spiritual priorities and something that, however good it may be, is simply of this world, when we make that choice, we evidence what our real values are. What we are willing, you know, the most powerful statement about your character often is, what are you willing to let go of? What will you sacrifice for and what will you not? And Jesus said in Matthew 16, verse 25, whoever desires to save his life will lose it. Your main intent is to hang on to what you think you've got, whether time or money, and you will not let go of any of that sacrificially. You're going to lose that and heaven too. You'll lose everything if your main intent is to hold on to what you have. But he who loses his life for my sake will find it. If you will sometimes yield that which you think you can't do without, this will be the end of the world if I let go of this. There will be terrible consequences if I sacrifice this. You do that, what you find is that you gain far more than you lose. You in fact gain what real life is. Jesus never let himself get involved in anything that was so important that he couldn't lay it aside to serve our needs. And that's the very point of Philippians chapter 2, which talks about his self-sacrificial attitude. Philippians 2 verse 5, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant and coming in likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. And so, if all the Lord ever gets are the leftovers of our time, are we not very much in the category of those in Matthew 13 in the parable of the sower who are described as the thorny ground? Matthew 13, verse 22. Now he who receives seed among the thorns is he, now listen to it, he who hears the word, but what happens? The cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and he becomes unfruitful. Choking is a powerful picture. Are you choking on activities that you are unwilling to sacrifice, even for the Lord? Let's think about it. I deliberately wanted to keep this lesson short so that I would get us out of here on time, so that we wouldn't have to sacrifice anything else we wanted to do this early afternoon. But I hope you'll think about it. If I seem a little bit stirred up about this, I am. And no less in regard to my own life than yours. We are busy, busy, busy. Some of my busyness has to do with the Lord's work. I think it's a little bit different. But I'll tell you, busyness in the Lord's work can sometimes interfere with serving the Lord. And so, can we learn how to spell that old-fashioned word again? Sacrifice. Letting go of a costly sacrifice for the Lord. And I want to end by saying something to you parents. Despite whatever sermons and pious talks you try to give to your children about putting the Lord first, I'll tell you something. They know whether you put the Lord first or not, because they see 24/7 what you will sacrifice for and what you want. Where the rubber meets the road in terms of sacrifice is your checkbook and your schedule book. And you can't fool your kids. They know. They know when there's a scheduling conflict in your family what gives and what doesn't. And if what they see is that when there's a scheduling conflict, the Lord's work is always the thing that takes the back seat. I'm telling you straight. You are setting an example for your kids that you're going to live to regret. when you see them as adults doing the very same thing that you taught them to do by your example. So if not for the Lord's sake, for our kids' sake, let's once in a while let them see an example of us saying, here's an activity that we're going to sacrifice for the Lord. Good, we'd love to do it. It may be even important in terms of the temporal affairs of this world, but we will let go of this. We'll give it up for something much more important. Try that. And your kids will see a very different you as they grow up. If you're here this morning, we can assist you in regard to obedience to the gospel. There's some need that you have that we could help you with. We would implore you not to allow any step to be untaken before you leave this building, that you could be in a right relationship with the Lord. If you're in a lost condition this morning, some step that you know you need to have taken in the past, but you haven't taken it, and you remain in a lost condition, then you are in, of all the conditions in the world, the very worst. You have no greater problem than your broken relationship with the Lord. And I implore you as a friend to do what you know you need to do before it's too late. And if we can help you with taking that step, won't you come while we stand and sing the invitation song? When we were